In today's episode, I learn a fancy phrase, Mike has a question about a chicken, JJ shares his favorite film and celebrity, and Samantha turns to alchemy and then insults some otters. This is City of God.
How about you, Josh? Who do you think is going to win?
I think it's the Hawks. I think they're going to dog walk the Patriots, to be honest. I think it's actually going to be a bad Super Bowl.
Ooh. I think Patriots by 14. It's going to be weird. It's going to be the most disgusting game we've ever seen.
Or it's going to be like that awful Super Bowl that was the Patriots and the Rams, where it was like 9-3. Or was it 9-6? I remember that one was so bad. I don't know. Mike, feel free to weigh in here, buddy. I know that you're a huge Seahawks fan.
Bird. I know football.
All you have to say is I know JJ can't throw one.
I was thinking that Mike was talking about
football.
Yeah, if
you can't throw in that game, I can't imagine how I would play.
It's probably like a rare talent. Just precision, 90 yards.
Just stuck to my hand.
He turns into Joe Montana or something. It's ridiculous. Oh, boy. So I was thinking that he was going to talk about football. And do you know a movie that football is kind of an important part or a important maybe catalyst for a film?
I see what you're doing.
You see what I'm doing here? Yes, correct. Okay. Well, welcome to Funsphere.
I think film.
I think Film Club too. Yeah, I was just thinking.
It had Criterion at the beginning. That means.
There you go. Should that be our indicator? If there's a Criterion collection, does it become automatically Funsphere Film Club? And if it's not, it's Funsphere Movie Club? This is
where
definitely.
Where does cinema fall into play with this then? Film and cinema.
Some things are cinema, such as
the Marvel Universe.
Miami Connection.
Cinema, yes.
Absolute
cinema.
Yes. All right. So today
Hi,
we're
I'm
talking
Rocket.
About... Okay.
I mean, Buscapé.
That guy had something wrong with him. The Lil Z. He had something wrong with him. We'll get started.
Yes. Yes, we will. And I'm going to say I'm Knockout Ned.
The movie that Josh will soon introduce was a heavy-ass movie, JJ.
It was.
I was not expecting that.
All right. So today we are discussing City of God. This is a JJ suggestion. JJ, do I recall correctly you saying this is your favorite film of all time?
It is my favorite film, yes. I've probably been to the theaters to watch that movie more than any movie ever. When it first came out, I probably saw it like, I don't know, maybe 8 times in the theater.
Wow. That's great. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
When did it come out here? Was it pretty close to when it came out there?
It was 3 or 4. Yeah, it was like 2003 or 4, if I remember correctly. It was before I had a kid, which is how I can go to a movie 10 times or whatever.
Yep, it was originally released, it looks like, in 2002. Yep, and it came to the States in early 2003. Okay.
Oh. All right.
I don't really want to give a synopsis of the film. I'll just say
it's JJ's
jam. Yeah.
So my JJ, jam. All right.
Yep. Tell us how you came to be involved with this, and feel free to give us a synopsis if you want to.
Okay. Yeah. So 2003. I was 23 years old. Still like really trying to figure out, like, do I want to continue broadcasting, which I currently work in, or do I want to do work on film sets or work with some of the smaller production companies? And I was just going to the movies all the time, and I just happened to see this one. At that time, we still had a movie theater in the mall just right down the street from our house. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to go there and watch this on a whim. It's there. It was only in there for like a week or 2 weeks, I think. And
was it an independent release?
Yeah. But it was at the mall. So I found out two things when I went to go watch that movie. Who took tickets, which was a celebrity at the time, at our local theater. And Mike, I don't know if you or any of y'all, I don't know if y'all remember who used to take tickets there. And then
I think I do.
Yeah.
No?
And, the wrestler, Mr. Fuji.
Yes.
So there was a little bit of me wanting to see him first. And then I was like, why? So I know now this movie takes a backseat because I wanted to see if it was true because someone told me I didn't believe it. And I was like, well, I want to see this movie that's over there. So I went there to watch City of God and to see if Mr. Fuji was working. And both were there. And it was great. So yeah, I didn't really know much about it. This was still, I mean, it was 2003. It's like, you can read a few reviews on the internet, but they were like, this movie is just has that independent spirit. It was shot super quick, tight areas. And, they were trying to make this, you know, this kind of coming of age movie, but also not really. It's, I don't know. There was a lot that I read about it and I was like, I just want to watch it just to see how they shot it. Like all these crazy camera shots, all this weird look, this weird bypass kind of look that they have. Everything, like your whites are blown out, your colors are really blue or really orange. So it has that really early 2000s look, way before a lot of people started doing that. Like if you watch City of God and see how the camera movement was in like such tight places, and then you watch Hunger Games, for example, they try to do that same look, but it doesn't quite work in the forest versus, oh, you're in this small like apartment building trying to deal with this gangster or whatever.
Yes.
So yeah, I just wanted to see it just because I heard it looked great. That was it.
Okay.
I had no idea about it at all. Before that, I used to love the movie Snatch or Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, all those gangster movies that kind of came out, you know, around that time. So I would just sit there and watch them all the time. I was like, oh, there's a gangster movie. It's supposed to be shot pretty cool. Let me go watch it and go see Mr. Fuji. And that was it. Yeah. And then it's such a treat when I finished it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it.
Okay.
There was nothing all that led into it that would like, oh, this is cinema or film.
Okay. So you had no idea about the plot of the film, correct?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all.
I got to say, the thing that shocked me is I remember hearing about this film when it came out because I know it won at the Cannes Film Festival, won several Oscars, including Best Picture, I think, that year. It was like getting rave reviews, but I had no idea about the plot of the film. I literally thought it was like kind of a... like a documentary about the City of God, which is for
folks
that don't know.
Well, the poster is so misleading, too.
Yes! So is the... I was okay, I have something to say about the DVD case later, too, as well.
Yeah, because I have that poster. So, yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
So, I too, thought it was like a super kind of... I hate to call it artsy-fartsy film, but you know the types that get recommended that are just like...
Well, it had Miramax on it, so you're either going to watch High Art or Pulp Fiction. No gray
or
area in between.
Or Highlander. So, yeah. And then, like, sitting down and watching this, wow. I was not expecting, like, Goodfellas with... a little mix of Lord of the Flies, a little mix of like The Departed. Like, this is maybe one of the best gangster films I've ever seen. I was blown away by it because I was not expecting this at all at this type of story. So,
blown away by
stuff.
Infinite Bullets.
we'll get to the criticism of Infinite Bullets.
No, it doesn't really take away from the film. It's just whenever it showed that, when it revealed who did the hotel shoot up, I was like, Hang on.
Hang on. That man has the Contra code.
Yes.
How many people is he going to shoot?
And don't get me wrong. I am not a, like, oh, John Wick is so good because they count the bullets in the magazine and stuff like that. I'm like, it's fine for a cowboy to shoot 8 times out of a revolver. That's fine. 30 is a little bit much out of a six out of a six gun.
I'm glad you guys noticed it too.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't until that one part. I was like, cause
now to be fair.
Okay.
I was gonna say this is a story, so it's not like they're going for super realism at any point of this.
Just funny.
For sure, but there was a lot. So if you go, because yeah. We can really pick this apart because they are already poor. Where are they getting bullets? Let's just go ahead and see where they're getting. I get maybe having a gun because you stumbled across one, found one on the ground or whatever.
Yeah.
But bullets seem like they'll be hard to come by in such a very poor area.
Especially with how like frivolous they are with them. They're like, shoot in the air, shoot the ball, shoot everything.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't even could have seem been like consistent weapons too. It's like every freaking gun under the sun.
Yeah. Well, and that,
like,
how many different bullet types are there?
Oh yeah. I mean, like at the end of the film, they are spanning a literal army's worth of guns and ammunition.
Right.
Well, didn't they just steal the guns from that guy?
They did. Yeah, he was selling it to them the whole time. But it's like one of these things. This is you'll see it a lot. Like one of the reasons, like in Japanese films and stuff like that, that a gun is so scary is because they're so hard to actually get and obtain in that world. And in this world, like, you know, the type of gun they're using is like probably, especially in the very early films, probably World War II surplus. And so like, but again, to bring up the point, it's like, yeah, everybody's super poor. And that's definitely a through line of the film is the way that poverty affects people. Apparently, you know, they may not have money for clothes or clothes that fit very well or stuff like that. But, you know, they can run down to ammunition at any time and just pick up a case of bullets.
With alchemy, the bodies of the fallen into bullets.
Perhaps.
Two birds. Okay.
All right. So as reluctant as I was to give a synopsis, I will say this so people kind of understand what we're talking about here. This is a exploration of crime in the City of God, which is what are they called? Jeez.
Favela.
Favela? Favela, yeah. Yeah, outside of Rio de Janeiro. Yep. And it takes place over the slum. Yeah, it's a slum, basically. And it explores the crime that happens in this area over two decades, the 60s, 70s, and it ends in 1981. So you could say three decades, but, you know, it's a little cheating, I think. We follow a cast of characters. Like I said, our main character is Rocket, and he's our narrator and kind of the linchpin around who all the stories rotate. But I think it's very interesting to say, and I'm just going to say this right now, even though Rocket is the guy that we hear all this from, I don't feel like he's the main character of the film at all.
Oh, he definitely not. No.
No, he's just the observer. That's why he's the camera dude.
Yeah.
The city's the main character.
Okay. That's an interesting take. I like that. Definitely like that. Do we want to talk about this in sequential order? Like, because I feel like
that'd be new for us.
Very true. Very true. Because this film almost feels like it's three films kind of mashed in together. You got the 60s film, you have the 70s film, and then you have the last film, the 80s film. Okay. So, you know what? Let's try it, Samantha. Let's try to talk about it in the sequential order of the film. Although, to be fair,
I don't remember it, though.
To be fair, I learned a new thing here, a new phrase. This film starts in medias res. Does anybody know what that means? Because I didn't until I read it.
Someone's butthole?
No, it means, well, I guess you could argue that. It means it starts in the middle. The film literally starts in the middle of the story. And then we go
that
back.
That makes sense, yeah.
And we go, yeah, and then we finish it up.
Oh, because they were chasing that chicken.
Yes, that's correct. Also, I found that it was interesting because apparently Hamlet is a story that does this too.
How the, all right, we're talking about the chicken. How in the hell did they do that shot where the chicken runs in between the tires?
I'm so worried they just ran over a bunch of chickens.
I guarantee you that's exactly how they did that. They Milo and Otis'd that shit, okay?
No!
It's funny because you can watch like all the dead people in that movie and and see 30 dead chickens. Well, like, this movie's disgusting.
Well, that's how
because
they
handle
catering
the people
that day.
Aren't actually dead.
Yes.
They're acting.
They're like, like I said, that's how they handled catering that day. They just got a bunch of chickens, ran them in front of the truck. The ones that didn't make it, that just became lunch. I mean, they were definitely cooking.
Well, it was worth it. That was a really cool shot.
It was such a great shot.
Yes,
think about if they got it on the first try. Craft service.
Oh, they would have been so hyped. Yes. First take? What? Nobody would believe it. You would hear them all like shouting in the background. Yeah, I totally rooted for the chicken in the first part. I was like, go chicken, go chicken, go chicken. And then, wow. All right, so then we flash back to the 1960s when the slum is just kind of coming up. Apparently it's, I guess this was like a, I don't know much about the history of Brazil, apparently. Not that I would. But apparently, like, this was a big development time, I guess, around Rio.
It sounded like what happened with Australia, or the origin of Australia, where they just, all of the undesirables were forced into
were forced out of the town. Yeah, by the wealthy elite. So then we hear of we start to meet our characters. And we hear the first section is called The Rise of the Tender Trio. So I think this was like definitely the part that made me think of Goodfellas a lot, because it makes me remember the early part of that and how the characters would grow up looking up to these gangsters. So I thought that was like,
well, I wouldn't even think of them as gangsters. They were like Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they wanted to be, didn't they keep using a certain phrase for them? Like, not gangsters, but they wanted to be something else. What was it?
Ooh.
Hoods, I think, is what they would call themselves. Yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but there's some interesting translation things in here, too, I'll have to tell you guys about. So this is, like I said, it's a story about when Rocket is young. It's about his older brother and two of his friends and the major crime they pull off and the origin of the next big player in the series. We have the introduction of Little Dice. And who will then move on to become Little Z. I really like this one. I thought this was like they did a good story of like building out the whole neighborhood. And, you know, you had the like the romance about one guy trying to get out. You had the other guy that has the religious calling. And that shot where he's walking to the church. And then the cops notice him and shoot the guy behind him. That was like, wow, that is such a like wild thing. That was good. And like any good gangster movie, they also make sure that to let you know the cops are corrupt and that they're a real problem too. They're just another rival gang. And it's also, I think, does really well of like setting up how day to day the violence and crime is in their world. And like, it's so it's like, oh, this happened. And it's like 10 minutes later, let's go to school. I remember when literally they're pulling, was it the guy that killed his wife and buried her, and they were pulling him out of the house. And he's like, his buddy says like, all right, let's go to school. We've seen this. Let's go. Like on with the day to day. It's really shocking in that.
Yeah. And like to your point, how numb, like when Shaggy was shot.
Yes.
And then he was like standing over his body, Rocket was, but he was more excited about looking at that camera than he was like,
yes,
someone that's dead, you know? And so that's, it's interesting to see that how you can become numb to situations, because that's a Tuesday for him, you know? But, oh, yes, but there's something else that I've never seen. That's awesome. Or not never seen, not that particular model, but, you know, death we see every day. So, but, you know, small thing is that's why I picked this movie, because when Shaggy was running, it reminded me of when we watched Once Upon a Time in the West in the very beginning when the kid and the father were running and the guy was shooting. I was like, oh, my gosh, I've seen this somewhere. Where have I seen it? I was like, so that's what as soon as I saw that, I'm like, yeah, this is – I will sneak this movie in sometime, but it has to be – because I've never picked a serious movie yet. And I remember Once Upon a Time in the West, I was like, yeah, we have to watch City of God.
I'm actually going to use this as just a quick note to everybody here. I think this year we should maybe try to pick more serious movies that have like a, like this is JJ's favorite movie. So something that's like, doesn't necessarily have to be super serious, but to Mike's much relief, I'm sure, we'll try to just stop the all-time cult classics movies and talk about just some a little more.
Right. Well, there goes 80% of my list.
I know.
I only picked movies I legitimately
I was like, is this the year I bring trauma to the table? I don't know.
I think we're all trauma.
Are you talking about critical acclaim, Josh?
Doesn't have to be, but it could be
critical acclaim.
Okay, yeah, it could be that or more dramas versus, you know, comedies we stick with a lot.
I mean,
like
it's
that.
Tough. It has to be tough for anyone listening from, you know, from Miami Connection to The Secret Garden. It's like, what are you guys doing? where are we at right now, y'all?
Yeah.
Well, too bad. I think
it makes sense, but it's like, you know, it's like Secret
Garden. More Twilight. Miami,
don't pick a movie that you know is bad and don't really like watching just for the sake of inflicting it on the
not at all. Like, and that was the other big thing. I'm not asking us to go down the AFI's 100 top films or anything like that. Just like, you know, we've done the goofy movies that showed our personality and stuff like that. Maybe
we
this year.
Done a goofy movie.
That's correct. We have not done a goofy movie. But just something that's like, you know, this is a very interesting pick from JJ. And, you know, we've had some other interesting picks. Just that type of stuff was what I was going to encourage
you
to do.
I already know my next pick.
Okay.
Cinema.
Cool. Cinema. That's right. We're looking for absolute cinema here, folks. So, yeah, definitely have to figure out which trauma film then. Oof. Hobo with a Shotgun? Maybe. All right. So, do we have anything else to say about the 60s section? I also, as the resident car guy here, I do love the fact that they do show South America's love for Volkswagens. Volkswagens feature prominently in this film. Let's see here. Okay, I guess we'll just move on to the next section, the next 70s section. All right, and I think this is, for me personally, this was the most kind of disjointed part, but I think this is the one where they are, you get the vibe that they totally took and put on the poster and the DVD case that this is a coming-of-age story with romance and stuff like that, and it plays so very little part of what actually happens here. In the
so
1970s.
Nice to see the beach. Like, it just felt so nice on my
eyes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
The, like, the, just the difference, like, the, like, kind of, like, yellow-tinted yellow brown tinted grunginess of the city and then like the beach. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. And then I go back.
Can we talk about how weirdly chill all the guys are with their girlfriend going to the next person? Like the first boyfriend was like, okay, you guys are together now, I'm fine with it. And then it happens to Rocket and he's like, okay, you guys are together now, I'm fine with it. Well, and just go on being friends.
Yep.
Well, there's only one girl.
And it is you know, the height of the counterculture hippie stuff, so that's totally going on in this. I thought that was very interesting, is that this is a— we usually see that time period through the American lens, of course, because we were Americans. We're used to it as being a big part of our history. Out a secret Canadian or something like that? What's going on here?
She's Canadian.
British accent.
That's right. But I thought it was interesting to see how that stuff still went on the other side of the world. I took a class in high school all about 1970s cinema and how it changed.
I took classes in high school.
Fantastic. But I was going to say how the 1970s is a very pivotal time in cinema, because this is where we start to see more gritty, realistic films. It's not like kind of cookie cutter sweet films. Like, you had the films like the French Connection, you had all those stuff. So this was very interesting to also see that type of cinema reflected in this era too, because it's like you're seeing the almost kind of like the movie you would expect to, if it came out in 1970 from this area, this is what you would see. You see the drug trade, you see the violence, you see all that stuff. That was very common in 1970 cinema. So I thought that was interesting here. And it definitely has like the most— it definitely sets the stage for the entire thing. Like, all the big players are introduced in this section, I think, whereas they're not the focus of the 1960s section.
I did like how that lady's drug business just kept switching hands so easily. Like, somebody burst through the door. This is mine now. Okay. Yep. This is mine now.
Yeah.
That was a cool sequence.
Yes, it was. Especially like all shot from that one position, and it's just the people in the room keep changing a little bit. That was great.
Well, even the way that he tells it is so fun and unique.
Well, and the way that they, with that one scene, but on a smaller scale, just foreshadow the rest of the movie as well. Because, I mean, no one's going to win at the end of this. And you knew that going into it. But just watching this and how bad it's going to be, because, you know, like unlike any of the other early 2000s movies that you like Snatch or even 90s Goodfellas, where you're kind of rooting for the bad guys, like, you're like, these guys aren't really bad. I just saw Lil Dice grow up through this great montage of him just shooting people. Like, oh, that's so awesome. Yeah. You know, deep down, you still like feel kind of bad for him. Like, there's—
I know that he's hurting, but what really— the one scene that really fucked me up was when he had those two little boys and the one, and he was like, foot or hand, and that one kid was just sobbing. He looked so much like my nephew. I was like, no.
Yeah. And then,
he says hand and he shoots him in the foot.
Yeah. And I read that they were bullying that kid intentionally on the set to make him just cry. So it just even feels worse when you look at it. Like, he's really terrified.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. And I don't know how true that is, but it was like, you know, like, they were just making him like uncomfortable in certain scenes and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're like taking his lunch money or whatever.
And like I said, this is a film that does not shy away. They're like, no, this is the stuff, the type of violence that was happening during the time. I mean, they show a kid get murked. They show a kid get shot in the foot.
The kid that got killed, whatever, he was like, he was proud of it.
Yep. Yep. And and like I said, this is the big, like, I hate to be the literary nerd here, but I was like, God, they are playing hard with like Lord of the Flies right here, where you're seeing like the real young kids being capable of extreme violence and stuff like that. So I thought that was really cool. And I think, so we also get the introduction, I think, of maybe the best nickname of all time, Knockout Ned. We get introduced to the character here. And
Hero.
They definitely do that. Yeah. They say,
"Oh,
like,
George."
Mike, I thought you would text me as soon as you knew who that was. I was like, I was waiting for you, like, after the watch. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's him.
Yep.
Yeah, he was
so
the best.
So good.
So I thought it was great because they definitely, like, they build him up like, oh, this will be the hero of the third act. Will it? We shall see. Also,
he's handsome.
So a little thing apparently.
God, his,
like,
brother though, like, why? Why would he do that? Like, cut him with a knife? He ended up costing his family so much more.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Escalating violence.
Like, he should have just let him go.
Oh, so
right, but
this is one of those things, like,
taking out Little Dice though.
Yes.
Or Little Zay,
yes,
at
have.
That point.
Yep, Little Zay. So, like, yeah. this film has, like, comedy built into it just because of, you know, real life is sometimes funny. And,
what?
Like, I had a, like, feeling of, like, that was hilarious that they said that, but I feel so dirty for laughing at it. It's the, or so uncomfortable, like, laughing at it. Where he has that scene of, like, he goes, where Knockout Ned, where after his girlfriend is assaulted, he goes, why didn't he just kill me? And then they change the scene to Little Z, and he goes, hey, why didn't I just kill him? And it's played for, laughs. And they turn around and start going back. But it's like, you're laughing at this, just grotesque violence just took place. And, like, but it's, they, that perfect timing is, like, that is legitimately funny, that reaction.
Oh, for
but
sure.
It's like, yeah.
Well, even when Knockout Ned and Carrot, when they were building their army, the reasons why they were just handing out guns, you know, oh, he looked at me funny. Here you go.
Yeah.
Here
you
go.
Just
rolling.
You're in.
At that point, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I felt my favorite character in the, Shaggy. I'm sorry, not Shaggy. Benny.
Yes.
Mm. Benny was the best, you know, and had the best intentions. But, you know, anytime I listen to Everybody's Kung Fu Fighting, I always listen.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Benny. So if you ever hear me, see me with my earbuds on, I just say, oh, Benny, I'm listening to Kung Fu Fighting. So,
yeah. And it's
like,
it's,
I mean,
sad,
he's the character that. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Josh.
No, I was going to say, and Benny is, the, like, at this, that party, that is, like, the, you kind of get, like, the feeling, like, the story could go one of two different ways from this point forward. We see the guy, Rocket, make his way up into journalism and stuff like that, and this is how he gets out of the city, this is how Benny gets out of the city, but unfortunately, it turns into a situation where it just, at this point, things had kind of been, like, you know, we had the story about the crimes in the 60s, and we're hearing stuff about, we're seeing stuff that Lil Zay is doing, and we know he's crazy. We know he's a psycho. But all in all, things are kind of quiet at this point, for the violence. But this is the whole, like, turning point for the entire story. Or even maybe even the entire area itself, is because when this party happens and the tragic thing is, you know, Benny is killed, and it's his going away party, and everybody just wants to go out to a farm,
going away from life.
Yeah, but there's like there's no escape from this world.
Yeah, as soon as he was like, yeah, we're leaving, we're gonna go start it from. No, gonna die.
No, you're gonna die.
You're gonna go to the same farm everybody's dogs go to.
But for the, he died for the worst reason though. It was,
yes,
he got shot down by that girl at the party and it pissed him off and he got jealous.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But he,
yeah, well, that the
but
that
that's
guy
like
has...
you getting shot down is enough to make you kill your best friend for over a decade.
He didn't kill
his friend. It's supposed to just be enough to make you kill the girl who rejected you.
But it was
a joke about incels.
But it was but Blackie was the one who shot him, right?
So Blackie was the one who shot him.
Yeah, but still, they shouldn't have been arguing over the camera. They shouldn't have been. There was just a whole bunch. But you can tell, like, by that point, like, Zay never had control over anything. It was just chaos.
No.
And his time, you know, was going to come regardless. But the only person that could have even. Because if that movie would have happened the way, like, Rocket ended up with the girl and became a journalist and Benny left the city, like, what am I here for again? I don't care about Lil Zay. He's just 2K. You know, like, Benny kept it together, at least.
He was the
by the end
up
of
to
it.
That. Yeah, up to that.
Yeah,
because he was the one that kind of like he was the one that like he could mingle with all the groups. He was part of the gangsters. He was part of the what? Are they, not that I want to call them the preps,
playboys.
But I don't think the playboys. Yeah, and you know they were part of the slums. They grew up there, so he was the kind of the glue that held it all the piece together. And when he died, like he's Zay's one anchor in this world of every like super bad impulse Zay has is usually tempered by Benny. Like we're shown that throughout the film. So once he's gone, he's off the leash, essentially. So he's going to be
off
real
the rails.
Yes.
Runaway train.
He is
never coming back.
Yep, and so then we come to our final time frame, and back to
in
the
LA.
Beginning. That's right, and we're back
act.
To the beginning of the film too. And we get to just the full on war movie at this point. Because it's just violent act after violent act after violent act. It just goes down. And apparently, like, so this is supposedly based all on a true story or real events, I think is a better way to say it than a true story. And yeah, apparently this was a time of the gang war, and it just gets like super raw. Like, The violence just keeps escalating.
The runts?
Like, you know, yeah, God, the runts are terrifying. that's, yeah.
I don't even have to say what I thought.
Okay, tell us what you thought.
I just, the runts.
Come on!
No, the runts. Instead of runts, just runs of diarrhea.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
The runts.
Take out the T. Oh,
fantastic.
Diarrhea.
Oh, wow.
We're the runs.
The shittiest name ever.
It's because they run everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the other side of the walks.
We also make planes turn around.
Oh, okay.
Diarrhea plane.
Yes. Yes. Fantastic.
Sorry, go on.
I don't know if I can at this point. We're here. I was gonna say war is hell or shit. Maybe that's maybe the better thing to say.
It never changes.
Never changes. But we do get like just the fallout of we get told very clearly there are no heroes here. There are really only victims of the poverty and the world that they're in, the violence that they're in. And, you know, we do get Rocket does. He's the one person that finds an avenue out of here. But I think that the film ends on a with the runts with a T having a discussion.
Trunts?
About yes. Yes. <thank
you>. The trunts?
The trunts. Of the cycle.
Yeah,
violence.
That bummed me out. Those kids just perpetuating the cycle.
Yes.
Discussing who they should kill. Big long
exactly.
list. And they're like 5 years. They're like five.
Yes. Kids. Yes. So like it does end definitely on a kind of a downer. I think, you know, we have all of the major players. I was going to say the only one I think that makes it out alive is Carrot. Does Carrot live? He's arrested, yeah. But we don't know if... Okay. So, yeah, everybody else that we've dealt with is dead and super dead, to be quite honest.
Alchemized into bullets.
Well, Little Z gets it pretty rough. He gets shaken down by the cops for his money, and then, like, his control of the war zone, for lack of a better word, is completely gone, and he's killed. He's assassinated by the runts.
Good. He got what was coming to him.
Okay.
You know, past hurt, mental illness or not, he still made some pretty bad decisions, I think.
Certainly. But I would also pose this question to you. Is he also very much a victim of
circumstances he was born in? Yeah, he is. But just because you're a victim doesn't mean you get a free pass on all your actions.
A victim who's also psychotic.
Yeah, because I was going to say, laughed when he shot the people when he was a kid. That's terrifying. Yes.
Yeah, he was like, well, they're having fun and I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
48 bullets.
48. I shoved 8 bullets into every chamber. And, whatever it's called. Where the bullets go.
Yeah. But I think, like, you know, as much as I agree that he is an absolute psychopath, it's one of those times, like, what makes Norman Bates scary as a psychopath is that he chooses to basically be that psychopath or react on it. I think Little Z is his situation is only made worse by where he is. He wouldn't, I don't think, be as bad as he is if he was anywhere else in the world.
Well, no, if he was able to get like the proper help and treatment, he probably would not have.
Still wouldn't be a good dude. Still would not be a good dude.
He would need help for sure. I can't even say he wouldn't have ended up. I think he. What's it where you lack empathy? Because he definitely does not have any. Sociopath?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he. Yeah.
Well, it just shows that it makes how bad he is. It makes people like Benny look good. Because if you had a friend that was just like Benny only, you're like, this guy's not good. He's kind of bad. You know?
Yeah.
And, he's cool, man. He's no Little Zay. It's fine.
He's not absolutely insane.
Yeah. It's just mostly crazy.
I actually would have liked to see a movie about just Rocket and his, just from his point of view, like him going into into journalism and stuff.
HBO has a 20 years later TV series about it.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, it's Return to City of God or City of God 20 years later, something like that. Yeah.
City of Man.
And there's a City of Man show about the kid that played Steak and Fries. He's in it. And then there's a just about them growing up as kids. So it's probably more about the 80s when they were.
Interesting.
But I haven't seen the Rocket series yet. I've been meaning to, but I don't know why. No. There's no excuse there.
I might watch that today. I was going to work on my book today, but now I have an excuse to not write.
Oh, boy.
Well, if you ever find yourself in a spot in writing, just bring out a gun, unlimited bullets, kill everyone, start anew. You should be fine. Yep.
They're all writing things and I'm not.
So my biggest mystery surrounding this movie, like my big takeaway was, how can these people be so sad when their music is so beautiful?
I don't know.
Oh, well, I mean, come on.
And they have a lot of chickens. They have food. There's like chickens everywhere. They got music. They got chickens. What else do they need?
Whole Bossa and Samba soundtrack is so perfect for this movie, though, because it's such a stark difference from all of the horrors that you're seeing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of reflects on this area as a whole, because this is one of the, like, you're talking about the beaches earlier. They are, like, fantastic there. And you have such
except
a...
Except for the snail.
Okay.
Watch out for that snail.
Watch out for the snail.
you know the one.
The one, yeah.
In the shell, that will if one hit KO, you're dead from that snail. It's real. This. In Brazil, yeah. But watch out for that.
I was also going to say Brazil is also, it's such a unique melting pot of ethnicities and cultures and stuff like that. So I think, you know, the fact that the music is so upbeat and happy sounding is just, it's that dichotomy that this place has. It's extreme poverty and it always has been. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it's got natural beauty. It's got beautiful people. It's got the rainforest. And yet it's also so very, you know, poor at the same time. And it's got just the most, like, visual example of poverty that you will see. Yeah. And
it has the most fans to ever be in a fandom. Because no matter who you are, no matter what you do,
uh-huh.
there will be a comment on your post that says, come to Brazil.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about, like, the World Cup when it was in Brazil, you know, they made,
yes.
and I don't know how much, I may be misquoting this, but, you know, the tourism that people wanted to see all the slums was a part of it. Like, oh, I'm just going to mm-hmm. sleep in the slums. I've seen City of God. I'll be okay. You know?
And what?
I don't sell drugs. Oh, I'll be fine.
I'll be like, well, I know where not to go and stay in the nicest resort.
Yeah. Yeah. Magical crystals.
No magical pistols, just draining the natural resources and contributing to the poverty cycle. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the interesting thing was... Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, well, I just had the realization, I wonder if this movie inspired Max Payne 3.
Mm.
Probably.
Mm.
Because that's a big portion of that game.
Right, yeah. And if you look at early 2000s, a lot of people, like... music videos like Snoop and Pharrell, mm-hmm. they were all in Brazil. I mean, I think everything was around that time. I don't know. It just seemed like that was where we needed to go.
Oh, yeah.
Bright
yeah.
colors. Yeah, but I don't know.
I've always wanted to go to Brazil, mostly for the Amazon. I've wanted to see a jaguar my whole life.
Yeah,
I don't like the otters there, though. They're ugly. Those pit bull otters in the river. Buff, ugly ass.
Did you guys see that? the lady who tried to take a selfie with a snow leopard?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
A snow leopard. She got mauled.
Of course she did. What the fuck?
And that is such a weird...
They have her, like, her selfie that she did right before, and then there's video footage of her getting mauled.
Oh, my God. Did she get mauled to death?
No.
Okay, cool. She can still post that and be like... Yeah. still post it and be like, 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Or worth it. I post it, and the next slide be me getting mauled.
So that's
just worth it.
That's just
I did a thing.
This is the last time I look like this.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's so weird that is my favorite animal, the snow leopard.
I love snow leopards.
Yep, they're really unique. They are also that's probably the first confirmed mauling by a snow leopard.
Because they're rare. Was it in the wild or at a thing?
You will rarely ever see them. Like, it takes years of... filming documentaries. They usually have to film them over 4 or 5 years because a sighting is so rare.
Like a Florida panther.
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe it wasn't a snow leopard then.
No, it was a snow leopard.
Kind of cat. It was like a ski resort, I think.
It was a captive.
Huh.
Yeah. They are in captivity.
She just got... Oh, it was a in captivity
one? It was in captivity.
I don't know.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
If she saw one in the wild,
she
got mauled by one. Yes, I'd be like, thank you.
That is a National Geographic wet dream. They're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna take this selfie. I will feed you. I want your species to continue. Go ahead.
Yeah,
and you just wear a shirt for future times, like, ask me about my face.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like.
I tried like, to die.
But, you know, like, unlike other big cats, like lions and stuff like that, I guarantee that is probably the first confirmed mauling of a human, of attack of a snow leopard on a human.
Oh, it's
got to
be at least
500-600 years. Easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, the only big cat that I think you can trust is a cheetah. I think they're the most tameable, surprisingly.
Well, let's ask the cavemen that. I bet you on their little wall art that they've built over there, you know.
Well, in my caveman game, I do have two pet lions. So, cave
wow,
lions.
No problem. No problem.
And a wolf. And a wolf, so.
Okay. Well, this film was taking us places. Fate.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, also, we do have to mention that we did have some Brazilian people listening to us as well. So it also kind of makes sense. Yeah. So we can kind of relate.
This is for them.
Yes. Snow leopards.
Comment. You can tell us about the snail.
And of course, this is
did
like,
you guys. Oh, go ahead, Josh. Sorry. I was just going to say, did you like the movie? Was it? Yeah.
I did.
Totally.
I won't watch it again, but I liked it. I mean, I liked it enough to want to look at the follow ups, but I don't need to watch that one again. I think I would if that one scene was out, and now knowing that they were actually being mean to that kid just makes it worse.
I will say
it's
this.
Heartbreaking.
I definitely will watch this again. Like, I picked this up because I know you were recommending it to us and that we were going to watch it at one point. I bought it. I still have a real problem with, like, the marketing for it in the U.S., I'll say that, because, like I said, it's the poster looks like almost any other type of, like, coming-of-age teenage documentary. Oh, yeah, but, like, and then the story you get, I'd hate to be like, oh, you know, this is a sweet little movie that I'll show the family. And I was like, no, this is a fantastic gangster movie. Like, I'm putting
this. Is it rated
R? Yes, it's definitely got to be. I was gonna mention real quick. So apparently, when they were filming this, JJ, so you had some questions about how they were filming it. They had to film in a different city because they intended to actually film in the City of God. But apparently, it was in the middle of a conflict at the time of filming. Huh. So yeah,
the runts
had grown up at this point. They were no longer the runts.
It just became full turds.
Scatological humor. Fantastic.
Oh, poop jokes never go wrong.
Yeah.
So much fiber.
Oh, JJ, I was going to ask, have you seen the there was a proof of concept movie for this? The a short film, it's called Golden Gate as a test run.
Golden Gate.
Yep. Apparently it was a test run while the casting was taking place. But the director filmed the short film Golden Gate.
All so right. It's technically I've got it in my notes.
Sweet.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was reading that a lot of the kids were from the city and they were just auditioning people that knew that area pretty well. So none of them are really actors. I think the only one that's really continuing to do work is Angelica, and she was like in a few James Gunn movies. But to your point where the picture where you see the cover of her kissing Rocket on the beach, is that the only picture you see, or do you see the picture that he's supposed to take of all of them? In the very,
I don't think there's.
There's one with with them kissing on top, and then the group picture.
Right,
on
so
top.
Look at that group one because remember this is when Disney owned Miramax, so they took out all the guns. So they're just pointing at the camera like this.
Oh yeah,
so
it looks like it's a beach movie, or something.
Yeah,
like
we see you kissing. Yeah, you know, wait a minute, that's. So they really tried to clean this movie up because. I mean, if you think about 5-6 years before that, Island, which was owned by Disney at the time, released a fantastic album. I'm joking when I say fantastic, but The Great Malenko from Insane Clown Posse. So it's one of those, you know, you don't want too much violence attached
to your
brand
IP.
At that time. Now they're all in. They don't care. But
ICP.
ICP.
Jeez.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I really think I'm adding this like in the like rankings of gangster films. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always going to be The Godfather Part 2 is number 1. I think this may have just topped Goodfellas as far as next up.
That's a good one. It's tough because I do think, I mean, I like them both. I really love Goodfellas, but I really, really love this movie as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I feel that they're different enough, but the same, but you have two different feelings because Goodfellas, you're just getting sick by the end of it. You're like, oh my gosh, this is just getting worse. And you're just going down that path. Like, this one, it gives you a little bit of hope and then just to bring you back down. Beautiful scenery, bring you back down. And you're like, I can't continue this. And at the end, you're like, well, it's going to continue to happen. You can go on along with this ride. Follow the runs. You're like, no, I'm good. We're done. We're done here. Because I know it's going to end bad. You know, just get me out of this place.
Anyone else have
If you ever come to New York, Skid Knight can take you to Nears, which is where they filmed a lot of the bar scenes for Goodfellas.
Ooh.
And you can pretend you're there in the movie, and they have really good, they have very, very good mozzarella sticks.
Ooh. We could try to recreate that shot.
Michael, bring his shine box. Go get your shine box. Jeez.
I'm talking about the, where they move the camera, but zoom at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Like the Jaws, the parallax kind of.
Anybody else got anything else to say about this one, or are we on to the next
one? I'm gonna watch the thing you know, that other guy, the follow-up, whatever, what's it called?
What was it called? I sent you all a text on it.
I can check my phone.
Watch City of God. The fight rages on. You know you're about to get it.
That doesn't.
Wow.
That doesn't.
That's like the tagline underneath, like a video game. It's like City of God 2. Yeah. The fight rages on.
I was able to watch this because. So Skid canceled our Paramount Plus, obviously, but then his friend John Murphy needed it for soccer or something. So now we have this Irishman paying for it. So I was able to watch it on Paramount Plus.
Oh, okay.
Worked out. Guilt-free.
I could have gone with better name, City of God Jr., if you want to keep it with the theme of...
City of God, a rocket tail.
City of God, God's revenge.
And of course, City of God 2, Lightning Storm. Electric Boogaloo. They could have.
Yeah, Electric Boogaloo, God's Revenge, Lightning Storm just takes my soul city.
We'd be great at the round table. Just trying to figure out.
Do you know what? I think they did the one thing in this film that may be solely unique to something set in Brazil and Rio de Janeiro. I don't think there is a shot of Christ the Redeemer statue in this.
There's no redemption to be found.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Unlike when you watch like Romeo and Juliet, the remake that Baz Luhrmann did, like in Mexico, they always keep showing Christ the Redeemer like at the top. You're like, where are we at here? What's going on with this movie?
They're in Verona.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I think we'll call it here, folks, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, sorry. One last thing. The translation issue I was going to mention. So apparently, even though I think it's the best nickname, Knockout Ned.
Yeah.
In Portuguese, it's Chicken Ned. Because apparently the context is that chickens is, well, in our culture, is something you call a coward. It's something you call a ladies' man in Brazil and in Portuguese.
So his name is Chicken Ned?
His name is Chicken Ned.
Ladies love nuggies.
Yeah. And that movie would be on brand with, or around the time when the song from Project Pat, Chickenhead, was out as well, which has a completely different meaning.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
That term made the rounds a bit in middle school. In the bay.
It did indeed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, wow. I could still hear that song. Panama City Beach, 2001. It's like, oh, yikes.
All right.
Anyway.
Goodbye. Well, we're going to say goodbye again. Bye.
Yeah, bye. See ya.
Bye.
For real.
Bye.